you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to another episode of Kotaku Split Screen. It is February 16th, 2017, and today we are going to spoil the hell out of Final Fantasy 15. That is right, Kirk and I are doing the Final Fantasy 15 spoiler cast that we've been hoping to do for a while now, which means we will be getting into all sorts of spoilers about Noctis and crew. We will also be covering the news of the week, which includes Zelda DLC, PewDiePie jokes, and Valve killing Steam Greenlight. So I hope you're ready for all that and some Final Fantasy spoilers. Let's go. And we are back for another episode. My name is Jason Schreier. I am here with Kirk Hamilton. Hello, Kirk.
Hello, Jason. How are you?
I am doing just fine, except I did not have time to eat lunch today. But other than that,
yeah,
I was doing just PG.
I was telling you before this, I barely had time to eat lunch. You got to eat lunch. Lunch is it's a very important meal.
But you did have time to write a large article about Final Fantasy 15, which is what we will be talking about today.
I did. We both got our Final Fantasy articles on the site in time to do our big Final Fantasy conversation that we're going to have. It seems
appropriate. Yeah, good day for Final Fantasy. I like that. I like it when we were talking about Final Fantasy. I like it when Final Fantasy is...
Do you? I can't imagine why you would like that.
So... First, we're going to do our news segment, and then we're going to jump into Final Fantasy 15 spoiler cast, which we will clearly mark as spoilers.
I think we're kind of marking it right now. It's going to be a complete spoiler
cast. Right, but we'll say like right before that part starts, after the news part starts.
Oh, so I was planning just listen, like in the middle of our news segment, I was just planning to like blurt out how Final Fantasy 15 ends.
I thought I'd just try doing it that way. Does that count as news? I guess it qualifies as news.
I'm like, here's some news for you. At the end of Final Fantasy 15, Kaiser Soze is actually Noctis.
Well, that would be a good ending.
That would be.
But unfortunately, it's not the one we got. Anyway, nope. Let's jump right to the news, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right, so a couple of good stories happened this week. First of all, Zelda Breath of the Wild is getting DLC and a season pass, which I guess isn't technically a season pass because it's the only thing you can buy. So here's how it works. So what they're saying is you can spend $20 to get this DLC pack, and it comes with two different packs, basically. Mm-hmm. The first one, which is going to be out this summer, is a hard mode and a Cave of Trials, which is like a challenge dungeon, and a new feature for the in-game map, whatever that means. The second content pack, which is coming out in the holiday, adds a new dungeon and a new original story. So that's like the proper DLC.
Right,
it also comes with a treasure chest that will appear in your game, and you open it up and you get a shirt with a Nintendo Switch logo on it. So you can have Link running around with a Switch shirt.
That seems worth $20 on its own.
Yeah, what's strange about this whole thing is that you can't buy the DLC separately, which is weird. So it's like a $120 package. So it sucks that they're charging for hard mode, because that's usually something that is just included for free in a Zelda game.
Yeah, of all the things that you listed just then, hard mode feels like something that would be patched in. Like they would say, oh yeah, we're going to add that as a free update. That's the only thing that doesn't really fit with the rest of this. And I mean, the Switch t-shirt seems like a bonus.
Can you imagine this crazy intense story where you're saving Zelda and she's crying like in the trailer, and Link is wearing a Switch t-shirt.
He's wearing like a promotional shirt. I mean, I feel like that's actually kind of, I don't know, maybe these games aren't usually that goofy, but I feel like there's always kind of that kind of goofiness. But
it'll lead to some good videos. It'll lead to some funny memes.
Yes.
Well, so yeah, so the hard mode, so we don't really know what a lot of this stuff is. Usually right. in a Zelda game, there's a hard mode where you, like, everything takes more damage, it's harder to kill, and then it does more damage to you, mm-hmm. or, like, you have less hearts, yada, yada, yada. In this, it could be something totally different that justifies the price point, but just from the reading this description of what they put out, it sucks because you shouldn't have to pay for
it. I mean, it's interesting, right? It's not as clear. Like, if they were charging $10 just for hard mode, that would be clearer and easier to say, oh, this isn't worth it. But if, like, $20, it could be this is totally worth $20, like, in the end, if you get all the DLC. If there's a cool expansion, a cool little side story, then great. And this isn't, it's kind of interesting. Like, it's not really a season pass, right? It's just a series of DLC. Like, it doesn't have that feeling.
It's just one package. Well, but the reason that it's being compared to a season pass is, first of all, they're calling it an expansion pass.
Right.
But it is a season pass because you're paying for something and you don't know what it is yet.
Well, but you can just wait and buy it later, right?
Sure.
I mean, when I think season pass, really what I think is multiplayer games, because then they have a sort of a season, like how Call of Duty releases, you know, a series of maps over the course of the year. If you didn't get the pass, it's kind of a pain in the ass to buy each one as they come out, and you can't play with your friends because they have, you know, they have the season pass and you don't, and it's tied up in a lot more of that kind of stuff, where with a single player game like this, for $20 you can get the promise of more stuff, or you can just wait. And it also, you know, it seems this is almost always how this goes, right, where the first thing that's released is the smaller thing. And then maybe that won't seem worth $20, and then everyone will just say, well, I'm just going to wait until the second thing. To me, that doesn't seem like a huge deal.
No, but a season pass, like games like Arkham Knight and Ubisoft games, they all have season passes.
Yeah, but like Arkham Knight's season pass involved a month, like a almost weekly. It was so many updates. There were, I think, I can't even remember, like 25 pieces of DLC in that game. Remember, I just re-reviewed that game and played through all the DLC. There was so much. It, if you go through it and like browse it in the game, they're organized by month. And I think it was an entire year's worth. I might be wrong about that. But every month, just there was something new.
Yeah, but I think the connotation of season pass is like with Arkham Knight and with this is you're buying something and you just have no idea what you're going to get. So with Arkham Knight and with those games that we mentioned other than Zelda, I think you were limited in when you could buy it. Here it seems like you'll be able to buy this thing up until when you actually know what the actual DLC is this holiday. So maybe it's not so bad and then you can just find out later if it's worth $20.
Yeah, I mean,
but they want you to buy Sight Unseen.
It'll sort of depend. And yeah, like there is that sort of slimy connotation just to of the whole you're going to buy this thing and you don't know what it is yet, which is just not, I don't know. I feel like hopefully people are doing that less and less because there's no reason to. It's just never worth it.
Yeah, and I will say, even though it's kind of weird as a Nintendo fan to see DLC in a Zelda game, and like you know there will be DLC in Super Mario Odyssey, which is also weird,
yeah.
I think it's cool. I think that the fact that they're building this big world and then adding more stuff to it is only a good thing. And if it's like a meaty expansion size piece of like dungeon and story, that'll
be
awesome.
I mean, I think that like something that we saw with Final Fantasy XV, it'll depend on the game. I think everyone is sort of assuming this game is going to be very, very good and it looks great and it seems very promising and it seems like there's going to be a ton of stuff to do. So if that's the case and then they just want to release more stuff and charge for it, fine. It's more, you know, I think it only gets bad when you start to feel like the game was sort of not as complete as it should have been and you're paying for things that maybe arguably should have been in the main game.
Right. At least with Final Fantasy 15, when they do like the chapter 13 fix, that's going to be free. That's not going to be a thing.
I mean, that's more, we'll that's get more of that. An inconvenient thing. I'm more talking about the episodes.
But we'll get to them.
We'll get there. I'm raring to go.
You're raring to go. So news item number two, PewDiePie got dropped by Disney and YouTube Premium. His YouTube show got canceled for making a bunch of anti-Semitic jokes and Nazi references.
Yeah, man, the world of
interesting.
YouTube.
YouTube is a strange world.
So
it's interesting.
It's very appealing
to young folks and their sense of humor.
So I saw a lot of the discussion was sort of familiar discussion that I think comes up whenever something like this happens. Like people talk about South Park and they talk about, you know, taboo humor and they talk about this sort of the freedom of not freedom of speech. I mean, that does come up, but that's, I think, kind of a non-starter because this just isn't about that. But
no, yeah.
But they bring up, you know, just the sense that a comedian should be free to make whatever jokes they want, because that's the way comedy works, is that it's mm-hmm. supposed to push boundaries. Thing is, like, I mean, when it comes to this stuff, like, my take is basically, like, I went and saw the video, and especially just because the way that, so what he did was, he was kind of daring people using this service called Fiverr, where you pay somebody $5 to do something. And I don't really know how it works, but I think you, like, put in a request, and then someone will just be like, yeah, I'll do that for $5. And then they do it. So you're like, take off your underwear and run around naked, and you do it. And it's like sort of seeing what you can get people to do. And so he got a couple of guys to get on camera and say, death to all Jews, right? I think was what they said. And like, the thing is, like, that's just a bad look, like, to me anyways, if you're especially like a super rich dude and you're kind of getting your laughs by getting on this service to pay people to say fucked up shit, like, it's, you're free to do it. I think he is free to do it, but it's not a great look. And my main takeaway is, like, I don't know, maybe, like, cut it with the anti-Semitic jokes in general.
Yeah, I feel like if you're gonna make anti-Semitic jokes, you have to be Jewish. Like, that's my job. I'm allowed to make anti-Semitic
plenty of anti-Semitic jokes. You make enough for everybody else that I know who is not Jewish.
Right. I feel like that's my privilege. It's right, my right it and my privilege as a Jew. So when, yeah, hearing PewDiePie do that makes me pretty uncomfortable. But I feel like that dude has just made his bones on shock humor. And so, mm-hmm. like, I remember back when he was first starting in 2011 or 2012 or whatever, all he would do was say faggot over and over again on his videos. And like, he eventually got, stopped doing that. And I think he maybe spoke out about it or apologized.
Yeah, I think
or something
I remember
like that,
him.
Like,
there was an article Patricia wrote about him a little while ago where he had said, oh, yeah, I regret that. And I think I've changed.
Right.
And I really, you know, honestly, from this guy, like, I don't dislike PewDiePie. I know a lot of our readers and a lot of people listening to this probably don't like him or think he's annoying, but I kind of like some things about the guy. Like, there are times where he does videos, like, I don't know him at all, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't really love his content, like, I don't love his videos, but there are times where he'll just do the, you know, the YouTuber thing where he just raps at the camera for a little while, and he'll talk sort of about his life and how unlikely it was that he wound up doing what he's doing, and he seems like an okay guy. Like, he seems like I'm like, oh, okay, you're not like some friggin' idiot or some moron or some jerk, you seem fine. And so, you know, the whole thing is, I almost get the sense that he's just bored or doesn't know what to do with himself or something.
Yeah, I hope he doesn't become the next Notch where it's like he just retreats further and further into himself and just because he's alone with his money.
I mean, that seems unlikely to me only because his whole deal is not
right,
retreating. I mean, he's out in public, he's talking to people.
Yeah.
He does it all
but
public.
It's still like there's that danger where like you have that edgy sense of humor and you feel like people are attacking you for it, and then you just become, you get pushed further and further. I saw some interesting points on Twitter about how a lot of today's alt-right and the like neo-Nazis almost were like the products of forum culture, internet forum culture and shock humor and stuff like that. And it got to the point where eventually it like solidifies and you think that people who are attacking shock humor are attacking political correct or like are pro political correctness, and mm-hmm. you start like moving further and further to the right, and it's really interesting, fascinating phenomenon. It seems to have happened with Notch. I hope it doesn't happen with Pewds.
Yeah, I think that and I know Patricia wrote an article that, and she's very aware of the YouTube scene and has been following PewDiePie for a long time and writing about him, and she wrote an article that I haven't had time to read yet because I was too busy complaining about Final Fantasy's user interface. But she wrote an article that was about, I think, a lot of that and touched on some of what you're talking about. The premise, I believe, is, you know, this has been a thing on YouTube, is this style of humor, this kind of shock value, you know, pushing the envelope, making jokes where you have someone, what was the one? It was like a guy dressed as Jesus saying Hitler was right. Like, and you do it because you're thinking of the most obvious button pushing thing you can do, because that's like the whole gestalt of YouTube, of like that's of that part of YouTube. And so this is nothing new, this kind of humor. It's just that now he's like getting into in bed with Disney, and he's like working with the super megacorp that like is very family friendly, and they're gonna say, oh, actually, you know, we don't really want to work with you. And it's not like that's gonna hurt him.
I mean, although it's weird, like this all happened a month ago, and then only because the Wall Street Journal started, I guess, reporting on it and approached Disney. I wonder that's why Disney reacted this week.
I was wondering about the chain of events there, just because, right, it seemed like two things happened at once, because Maker dropped him, which is the Disney.
No, that's Disney, and then right, YouTube Premium,
and then YouTube
dropped him also.
Dropped his premium show. After
well, that. What happened was the Wall Street Journal apparently found 9 different videos, and a couple of them have been taken down, and there were 9 different videos that had anti-Semitic content. So apparently this was a trend. I don't know. I haven't watched any of these videos.
That also doesn't sound good. I mean, you know, like, you give the guy
so
the
it's not just
doubt,
a one-time thing, is the point.
Yeah, that's a lot of videos to make, like, you know, anti-Semitic jokes in. That's more than just kind of doing it once as a laugh. That sort of starts to feel like, oh, okay, maybe
feels
you actually
like a
think
trend.
This is funny.
Yeah, and I'm very curious as to, he's in Sweden, right? Or is he in the UK? Or do you know where he's based?
I'm not sure where he actually lives or where he's based out of, no.
Okay, because he's most likely... Well, I don't know about most likely, but there are a lot of places in the world where there aren't a lot of Jews. And if you're making a bunch of Jewish jokes and you're not actually around
Jewish people.
You should move to New York.
You should get PewDiePie to move to New York so that he can be around more Jews.
Right, so he can, and then at least understand us and why you should really make fun of us.
I think basically we should get PewDiePie to come on Kotaku Split Screen.
That would be great. That would be fantastic. Let's move to the next story.
I think that's where we came down on this, though, is PewDiePie is going to come be a guest on our show.
That's a good final thought. Valve kills Steam Greenlight. Valve is replacing Steam Greenlight and within the next couple months with something called Steam Direct. And basically, instead of doing... So Steam Greenlight, if you're not familiar, was a service where you could put a game on Steam Greenlight and then ask people to upvote it, vote for it to be greenlit, and then it would turn into a Steam game. But that is not going to happen anymore. Instead, games will be put directly on the store when developers pay Valve X amount of money, which could be, they're saying, anywhere from $100 to $5,000. It could wind up anywhere in that range. And so we will wind up having many, many more games on Steam. This seems like the dumbest possible solution to a problem, to Steam's biggest problem, which is quality control. What do you think of that?
Man, I don't know. I have a lot of thoughts, I guess. I mean, I've definitely been aware of how Steam has been sort of struggling with this, especially in the last year, and how that was one of the defining things about Steam was just that there were so fucking many games last year, and it was just it's just this hilarious mess. And there's also this whole skeevy sort of underbelly of Greenlight that we never really even see. I think that most people never even see. Like, where there are people who will get you on Greenlight, you know, and there are a whole, like, there's a whole cottage industry of people who have followers who will vote for you. And, you know, and it's this whole weird thing that kind of tends to happen with those sorts of like, crowdsourced, that kind of thing. Like, when a company outsources to just random votes in that way, it tends to lead to exploitative behavior in this way. So I can see why they would want to crack down on that. I don't know if we know enough about how it's going to work.
It's going to be simple. They're saying you just pay Valve and then Valve will put it on.
Yeah, but I mean, they can say, like, in practice, who knows how it's going to actually shake out. Like, if it'll actually mean there won't be 75,000 games released on Steam this year, or there will be, or there's a sliding scale, and maybe you're subject to quality review if you don't have any money, but you have to demonstrate that you have a good game. But if you're like a huge publisher, you can just pay and get on there. I don't know. Like it there could be.
I
some
don't know. The
variance.
Way that they're making it sound in their description of it makes it sound like you just pay us and then you get on immediately.
Right.
It could be anything. I don't know. But they're saying that's it. Where, I mean, like, they have to, developers have to like set up, like file tax documents and paperwork and company verification and stuff, or like personal verification
and
stuff
like
that.
Bank account, isn't that kind of?
Yeah, exactly. That's what they said. And then they said, and that's it. Like, they didn't say anything about quality control or anything.
I mean, it's as much as people bag on Steam Greenlight and as much as Greenlight led to sort of bad things, it also, there were a lot of games. There were games that got on Steam because of Steam Greenlight. Like, I remember before Greenlight, it used to be one of the clearest paths onto Steam was to get your game into the IGF at the Game Developers Conference. Because if you got into the IGF, you, I think, were guaranteed a store spot on Steam, which used to be huge. I mean, there was a, like, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, maybe, or maybe a little more. That was a huge deal just because you were on Steam now, and it was, people could find you and your game was easy to buy. Now anyone can get onto Steam, and that's not really a thing. I feel like that was also kind of a problem, right? Because it was, there were, I'm sure there were really good games that couldn't get onto Steam and kind of ran into that gatekeeping on the other side. So I don't know. I would want those games to get onto Steam.
There is no easy answer to any of these problems. Well, now that it's going to be the quality control problem.
It's not an easy answer, but one possible solution is Valve actually opens a department of people that decide what games go onto their store.
I don't know. Do you really want that? Do you really want Valve controlling who gets to being a gatekeeper for quality?
I don't know if I want that. I have no idea. I don't know how that would express itself, but I think it would be totally reasonable. I think it's their store, and it would make sense for them to say, hey, this is our store. We're going to choose what we sell on it.
I don't know. Something about that feels like it could lead to all sorts of manipulation and weirdness.
Every other store works that way. GOG works that
way. Yeah, but Steam has such a monopoly on PC gaming that it just feels like that would, I don't know. I think that would lead to a lot of bad things. Just the idea of having a cabal of people deciding who gets to go on Steam and who doesn't just feels like a
that's just how it worked before Steam Greenlight, so...
Yeah, no, that's true. Although it didn't seem like they were just, it seemed like they were just letting big publishers on and whoever found a way to get in touch with Valve rather than.
Right.
And also indies. The rise of indies, there weren't that many independent developers making games and releasing them until, 2007, 2008 or so. And then a lot of it was on Xbox, indie marketplace. And so this is a relatively modern problem. So I don't know. I mean, that's one way. I don't know. I don't have a solution. I don't work for Valve, so I don't need to come up with a solution.
We don't need to have a solution. This
seems like it could lead to even an even bigger glut of games and too many games.
Yeah,
ongoing problem.
Hopefully, them announcing that they're working on full VR games and them saying that they're actually making video games. It is always a matter of resources, and if Valve is going to be putting their resources somewhere, I would rather they. I'd be okay with Steam still being kind of crowded or really hilariously terribly crowded if they're spending their time making games. That's fine. I do understand that they, as much as money as they have, they don't have a whole staff that can just do this.
And they're not making games. Don't count on any actual Valve games.
They said they would.
They're lying.
Can't remember what our I've already forgotten what our predictions for this year were. Really, there were two related to Valve, I can't remember what they were.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
All right, let's do it. Let's talk Final Fantasy 15.
Oh, man, okay,
so,
here we go.
This is a spoiler warning for anyone who's not played Final Fantasy 15. Now is your last chance to get out of here.
You think they're gone? You think they left?
Yeah, I hope so.
I hope so. Yeah.
If you're still here, well, you're going to be spoiled. Noctis dies at the end. there's a wedding with Luna, a ghost wedding with Luna.
He does die. It's funny because he does die at the end.
I know. That's why I said it. We warn people. So.
Yeah, we did do the warning. And then we're just, I mean, I think if you're going to warn people about a spoiler, you do need to immediately follow up with the biggest spoiler possible.
Yeah, well, hey, man, if you didn't want to be spoiled, you shouldn't have downloaded the podcast called Final Fantasy 15 Spoiler Cast.
Yep.
And listened through two different spoiler warnings. Anyway, now consider yourself spoiled. Noctis dies. Ignis goes blind. Prompto is a machine, I guess, or like...
Or like a genetically engineered something. I don't know.
Makes no sense.
He's an MT.
None of it makes any sense. All right, so now that you have played this entire game, we can talk about it, and there is much, much to discuss. First of all, I mean, do you see why I love the whole sum of the whole greater or the sum of the parts or whatever the fuck? It's all greater than the sum of its parts.
Yes, I see how you feel that way. I would never use the word, I would have a hard time using the word love when I talk about this game because there were so many things about it that were just so flawed. And then also there were so many things about it that really annoyed me while I was playing, which I kind of like. There's kind of a difference, right? Like, the flaws, there's flaws in the story, there's, like, storytelling, huge gaps in the story, the whole back half is a disaster, the ending doesn't make sense. I mean, it does, kind of, but it doesn't. Like, there's all kinds of those issues, and those are all sort of things that I'm like, okay, yeah, that didn't make sense, that didn't work, whatever, I get it. But then there were a lot of times playing this game where I would just feel I was not having fun. I was frustrated by just how the controls worked and by combat and by the menus and the interface like I wrote about today and by just how unwieldy and patched together this mess of a game is. And I've been playing so many games recently. I've been playing so much of this game Neo that we talked about last week, and that game plays so well. It feels so good. It's just responsive and quick and well done and well designed. And then I went back to play some Final Fantasy 15 after that and was just... It was just a wretched experience. So I have a hard time with the word love because of that. More even.
Well, I was
than
talking about me personally. I wasn't talking about you. I was saying, do you see why but I also got really attached to the characters and the story in a way that I don't think you'd, and the combat in a way that I don't think you did.
Oh, yeah, definitely not the combat, but
no,
also
but
the
you
characters.
Can see,
yeah.
But you can see how it's the type of game where, like, you're willing to look past all these warts and flaws if you get attached to the characters.
Yeah, I mean, and I really think that they even failed pretty regularly with the characters and with the character arcs. And with the payoffs, as much as they executed some things very well, it was like even the well-executed things kind of just stood alone in a field, and they were just surrounded by other shit that didn't work. And
like
so it wasn't this feeling of like, oh, there was this one really cool arc that carried through the entire game. It was
well, so
more,
like what didn't work?
Oh, I mean. Most of it, most of the story. I mean, what was the story of, what was Final Fantasy 15 about?
So it's about Noctis and his group of bros going around this world and like gaining more power for Noctis so that they could go and take on the Empire.
Okay, so that's like what happens, but what's it about? You know what I mean? Like, what's the story
about?
Well,
so it was supposed to be about like Noctis and his daddy issues and then maybe Noctis and his relationship with Luna. In practice, none of that happens, but it's really about Noctis and his bros, his group of friends, and like how they... like learn to like love one another and like how their relationship grows over the course of the game and how Noctis at first is like gruff and grumpy and yelling at them and then it builds and builds and builds and they tear apart and have their fights and battles and then eventually at the end of the game they have that great campfire scene which really made the game for me and it was like it really is about Noctis's inability to express his love for his friends and he finally makes that happen and it's like the end of his arc and now he can finally die now that he's done that.
So like laying that out right as like a theme, that's like a pretty good theme, right? If the theme is like about Noctis And it's about this group of friends and this guy and then his three friends and then how their friendship evolves over the course of this long adventure that they go on. And then at the end, he finally tells them all how he really feels. He's finally like able to say it. And right before they all go sacrifice themselves to like save the world. So that's cool. The thing is that like the execution on that is so busted and so all over the place and so missing crucial parts and so distracted. It's such a distracted story that it is, you know, obviously this game was like 17 different games and it was cut patched together from all this stuff.
Yeah, that's the problem. It feels like they made the decision to make it a game about bros later on.
But I mean, you did articulate the one thread that I can kind of find when I look at each of the major narrative threads, because it sure as hell isn't like the story of like the Emperor of Nilfgaard or of Niflheim. And it isn't the story of Noctis and Luna. Fuck, that's like the worst part of the whole game. And it isn't the story of Noctis and his dad, because his dad isn't even there. So it has to kind of be this one thing. But the problem is they have all that other stuff. They spend all this time constantly going back and forth. A lot of the stuff you described could have been really cool. Like, okay, anytime someone leaves in this story, they just kind of vanish really unceremoniously. And they clearly, like, each of the three guys leaves the story to go do a DLC episode that we're going to do at some point. So the first one that leaves is Gladiolus. And it's like right after you have this kind of really great, this whole really great part where you and Gladiolus go and you hunt this huge monster. And like Gladiolus gets mad at Noctis for being kind of like a whiny brat. And then they have like this big moment, and then Gladiolus is just sort of like, okay, I gotta go. And then he just leaves, and you're like, oh, okay, weird. And then he kind of just comes back like an hour later, or less than an hour later. So compare that.
The way he comes back is weird too. He comes back wearing a suit, mask, and
it's like really clearly him.
Yeah, and it's like pretending that you shouldn't know it's him, even though you obviously do know it's him. It's very strange.
So I'm gonna make a completely unfair comparison, but I'm going to compare it to The Last of Us, and The Last of Us. In the winter chapter in that game, and I'm going to spoil this game as well. If you haven't played that, I'm assuming at this point it's fair game. In the winter chapter of that game, Joel is grievously wounded and dying, and Ellie is by herself, right? And so that chapter is this like really huge deal chapter in that game, because suddenly you're playing a different character. She's alone. You're like on your own for the first time in the game. It like totally indicates both how vulnerable she is, but also how much she's learned from Joel. You play through this whole thing. It like flips the narrative in this crazy way. It's like this really huge moment for the narrative that they've been building throughout, and that they then flip back to and get all the way back around to at the end. And it's this whole like really well done thing, right? The difference between those two kind of like says everything about how far short the narrative of the bros and the friendship falls, just in terms of like how it's executed for me.
Sure. Sure.
So,
I mean, I don't disagree with that at all. But for me, just something about the way that they all clicked, and part of what you're describing is part of the quote unquote narrative itself, and a lot of what elicited a reaction in me is more of the organic stuff that came out of them like fighting together and like talking in the car. And for me, those are the most rewarding moments, was them just like bantering in the car about random shit and like the road trip feeling and stuff like that.
I mean, and I liked that. I really liked I liked so many of the little details.
So part of it, so let me tell you one thing also.
Sure.
So the way I played the game was I kind of blazed through the story in 20 hours or so, and then I spent another 30 or 35 hours just going around the road trip area and doing side quests. So I wonder if that colored the way that I saw the game, because
sure
so much of what I loved experiencing was just going around and doing dungeons with the gang and driving around and stuff like that, which is a lot cooler than any of the main story stuff, especially in the second half of
that
the game.
That makes sense. So the way I played it was kind of the opposite. I spent a long time going around the open world, but I was still too low level to like do any of the big dungeons. So I was kind of just grinding and doing, you know, monster hunts and stuff. And I really liked that part of the game. And then I kind of went on this slog through the final few chapters, and then I went on this slog to get to that dungeon you told me I had to check out. And like that kind of
Did you play it?
I played a little bit, yeah. Well, we can talk about it in a second. I want to hear. I just want you to tell me what it is, because I played some and was like, okay. But we'll get there. But there is stuff. I mean, so this game is so fascinating. I think that one of the reasons that I like it, like personally, is just because it's such a fascinating mess, and it's so weird and inconsistent and all over the place, and that just interests me, because, you know, for all the things that bother me about it, it is there aren't that many games that are this interesting, like, just to kind of, I don't know, like, just to play. So there are these things, like, there are these amazing details, right? Like, the characters all get dirty if they're out too long, and then if you, like, stay at the right place, they get cleaner, and, you know, they have all these animations and ways that they sort of interact with one another. But then also there's stuff like the fact that over the dialogue that they throw around just repeats constantly.
So Ignis being like, or no, Noctis being like, I don't know if I've asked you this, but is Ebony Coffee really that good?
Yeah, or the and thing where Ignis like, is like, I don't know if I've answered this. And Noctis keeps getting a headache. So I think it's partly because of where I was, where I did my kind of open worlding. I was in the middle of the story. So like Noctis was getting these headaches, and seriously, every 5 minutes or something, dialogue would play. He'd go like, ah, and then someone would say, this is not normal. And it just, I must have heard it like 80 times, and it was the kind
of... Oh, that's interesting. That's only because you hadn't gotten to the points in the plot where you...
Right, where his headache stopped. So it's kind of like also just this awkward marriage of the open world and the story, which is like one more, you know, kind of piece of awkwardness in a generally very awkward game.
Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like that to me is a reminder. That's the game telling you to just like go fucking do the main story, as opposed to if you did side stuff later after you'd done the Titan stuff and like right before you leave for what's it called, that city, that's name is slipping, Alticia. Right before you leave for Alticia, that's when you're supposed to do all the side quests.
Well, I guess, like, that's where I don't know. I mean, it's like you're higher level then, though, and there are like level appropriate side missions for you to do then. I think it's, I mean, this is an open world challenge, I think, that a lot of games come into.
Course.
But I don't know, like the open world just doesn't fit. Like it's this, one of the biggest issues of this game, right, is that it's kind of three games or four games or whatever. And that's so evident at so many times that if this had just been designed from the ground up, start to finish as an open world game, and there'd just been this one big area, and, you know, that was it. And maybe, you know, when it goes to World in Darkness, it's a new map, and the map, you have to go all over it again, and everything is different. Like, it seems like there was a version of that game that definitely was, you know, like on a whiteboard somewhere, and that, you know, at least sort of existed.
Well, it was going to be three games.
Yeah, but I mean, like, that game, like, that those pieces existed. It's just
right,
they had all these
right,
other pieces
stuff
that they had to fit in, right? So, like, that's the sort of fundamental issue, and that's definitely the issue with the open world, where, like, even the argument that you should finish the whole story and then warp back in time with a magical dog at a campfire from the final boss into the open world, because that's when you're actually supposed to explore the open world. Like, that's madness, like, from a
I think it's just like testament to the amount of stuff that they had to do, and like I think all that UI stuff would have been fixed or improved if they had another 2 or 3 months to make the game. Like, some of the stuff that was coming in hot, I don't know if you remember, but there were day one patches that added stuff like being able to use warp strike outside of combat and throw your sword outside of combat.
Right, yeah,
like that wasn't added until the day one patch, among many other things that were just being added constantly. So this is the type of game that very clearly was not finished when it came out, and I think that's a problem, and it speaks to modern game development, and it speaks to this game in particular.
I mean, and really this game in particular, because I do look at like Neo as a funny, you know, counterpoint, or The Last Guardian, which are like two games that were in development for an unbelievable amount of time and came out, and both of those games at least are like finished, you know. I mean, Neo is polished, it's really good, and they're patching,
but this is so much different. Well, so with Neo, I don't know too much about that game, but from what you've told me, it sounds like it was like a turn-based JRPG and like something else.
I don't think that they matched.
Well, hold on. The point that I'm making about that is that with Neo, the developers were allowed to make changes, and with Final Fantasy XV, they were stuck to, because Square Enix's decision makers decided that like they have to stick to Nomura's vision and like that character and that story and that world. So it had to be as close to Versus 13 as possible. So Hajime Tabata, the new director, couldn't just come in and overturn everything and do what he wanted.
Yeah. Is that like known? Like, that's really how it worked? As they said, dude, you've got to stick with what we've got here.
Yes, yeah, that's what happened.
Because, yeah,
so,
I mean, that's
the biggest problem there, right? So, yes. Like, imagine, well, so, like, Luna was a new character, but she was basically a replacement for this character Nomura created called Stella. And there was this, like, all these characters were, a lot of these characters were brought in from the beginning. And it seems like they, even if they wanted to make all these changes and restructure the game or, like, just make the first half all of the game, they couldn't do that.
Yeah, so to use the Neo comparison, and sort of in an illuminating way, Neo is like more like what would have happened if you know they had been able to come in and just say, no, we're just starting over, which that yes. game is basically, I would imagine, a lot of what happened. I mean, I think that they built out a whole lot of levels and stuff, but they just reused them because there's a ton in that game, but it all holds together because they made it into one game with one vision. It doesn't feel like,
right.
you know,
right,
if
right.
they had been like, you know, you have to make it a JRPG, you have to make it turn-based, you also have to have combat, like it has to be this and it has to be that, then it would probably start to feel a little bit more like Final Fantasy 15, which would make sense.
So all that said, so this game does so much right, and I think you agree with me there. Like, there's so many good things, like the feeling of going out and driving around and getting gas and camping and being on a road trip is mm-hmm. so unlike any other video game, yeah. any other open world game. I like the combat a lot. I'm surprised that you dislike
it
so much.
I just hate it. At this
Man,
point, I
that's
just
so
hate
funny.
It. I think it's just
that's
terrible.
So funny.
Like, it just is so sluggish. It feels like I'm underwater. The button mapping I got around, I like.
What weapons are you using? Are you using Noctis's sword or like something slower? Like, are you using fast?
No, yeah,
have you tried
using
daggers?
Sword,
or have you tried using daggers?
No.
Or anything faster?
No, just using a sword. It's not really, it's just...
I mean, you can use other weapons, which will make it feel less sluggish.
I guess so. I mean, it just doesn't really, it's more a matter of like, press a button and something happens. Like, it just feels like it's not... It just isn't the kind of combat that I expect from a game that moves like this or looks like this. Like, it just doesn't have the, like, I always feel like I'm waiting while some huge animation plays out or the camera is zoomed out so far that I just can't even see where I am. And there's like numbers flying off of stuff and I just am not even like.
Do me a favor, Kirk. Next, after the show ends, just go in for a second into the game and switch to a dagger and see if it feels different to you. I'm very curious because switching the weapons around, I mean, you're meant to be juggling weapons.
No, there's no, I mean, I'll do that, but like there is no, I've played with a ton of different stuff and there's no like thing I'm going to do that will change the way that the combat
Well, it'll
feels.
Change the animations because the dagger animation is much quicker.
Yeah,
than...
but it's like there's so like the combat has so many more problems than just that. Like the fact that there are area of attack spells that attack that hit you and your whole party, but you can't move your party around. Like the fact that like the only way yeah. that you can get people out of the way of your friendly fire magic spell is by using one ability that one guy yep. has that pulls everybody yep. back. Like, are you kidding me? Like, there are so many things like that that are like really core fundamental problems with the combat.
Oh, yeah,
like
100%.
It just never feels satisfying or under control to me. And like, I really like games where I feel like I'm actually like mastering something. And with this, it just felt like a numbers game. Like, it felt like, okay, I'm now high enough level that I can just sort of wail on stuff and kill it and just keep moving on with the story, which was all I ever really did.
Yeah, well, with that part I disagree with. I felt like I was getting better and better as I learned how to block and parry and dodge around and use a lot of warp strikes. Mm-hmm. Have you been using a lot of warp strikes?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I agree with you on the friendly fire thing. Like, that is friggin' absurd. And another thing that, like, someone should have figured out and would have figured out probably if they had more time to test and polish stuff.
Yeah, I mean, just comparing this to a game where, like, this is basically like Bayonetta or Devil May Cry. I mean, you're fighting small dudes and then you're fighting huge dudes. And the huge dudes have really elaborate attacks and you have to be really careful and there's a lot of dodging. But I mean, the difference, the gulf between this and one of those games is just so huge that I didn't even, I mean, I'm sure that I could have spent the time and fine tuned things to get a little bit better at it and to master it more, but I just didn't see the point. Like, there are so many more games like that I could play right now that I don't really want to spend time with one that just is totally not there on so many fundamental levels.
So what did you like about Final Fantasy 15?
I liked the stuff you said. I loved how, like, just the feeling of driving around this world. I liked the world in general. I loved the music. I loved just the flow of that, like of walking around a town and sort of the weird, the sort of ridiculousness of how of the world. Like it's not like an outsized ridiculousness. It's this sort of very specific Final Fantasy ridiculousness where there's like a reality. You're driving in normal cars and you're wearing kind of normal clothes, but then you're also riding chocobos and everything is a little bit off and weird. And there's and even like the inconsistencies in the game crack me up. The characters have names like Dave or something. Like, you know, it's like the NPC names, like you're Noctis and Gladiolus and Ignis, and then you meet some guy and his name is Dave. I think maybe we talked about this on the podcast.
But like, yeah, Dave and Noctis hanging out.
I really like all of that. Like,
it's all gorgeous, too. So you were telling me about a battle that was pissing you off the other day.
Oh, God.
But from what I remember, and I was looking this up a little bit online, it seems like you're supposed to trigger a summon in that battle. So have you ever triggered any summons as you were playing other than the ones in the final boss?
Yeah. I mean, like, just in fights.
Like randomly?
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing that really pissed people off is that you couldn't summon things. You just had to wait for it to appear.
Yeah, I mean, it never appeared for me in that fight. There's also even that, like the way summons work, a lot of times it would come up and then you kind of have to hold down the trigger. And I remember there are times where I was just holding down the trigger thinking, okay, like, is this going to trigger? Or and my guy is getting hit and I'm like, am I going to die trying to do this summon? And I couldn't even, like, and it wouldn't work. Like, that's the kind of stuff that it's just there's this disconnect between you pressing buttons and stuff happening on screen
Yeah, I wonder how much of this stuff was just created in the past year.
Yeah,
in,
like, I do
the
too.
Last and just few and, months of development.
Yeah, just how on fire it was in the month before it came out. I'm very curious about
that. Yeah, because I remember Episode of Sky just did things so much differently. Mm-hmm. Even the summon, like, I think you can only summon when you were staggered. But even that whole stagger system was so different. Even in the preview build I played, like, a couple of months before it came out, when you were staggered, when you were in stasis, so when you lost all your MP, you like staggered around and could barely do anything.
God, that would have been annoying. Stasis was
That would have been really annoying.
It's just such an odd combat system. Nothing really. Stasis and MP and running out of MP in combat and it, like, all of that is just all very.
Man, I think it works really well. I enjoyed it quite a bit when I was playing.
Yeah, I know there are other people who like it, so I'm not discounting the fact that this is partly a matter of personal taste and just the kind of combat that I like in a game versus the kind that I don't like. But yeah, I'm not really into that.
And then you get so you play through the first 8 chapters. So I think we talked about a lot of the first half stuff. So the second half stuff. So you get to Altitia. So, what'd you think of like that negotiation in Altitia?
I thought that was cute. I mean, it was funny. It reminded me of those sort of odd Final Fantasy moments where you're suddenly doing a different kind of game.
Yeah, it was great. I wish there were more stuff like that.
I think that really it's the second half, and there's a precursor to this is the fact that like the stuff with. With your dad and with the kingdom being overthrown happens off screen and isn't shown to you. But I think
in the movie,
basically,
Kingsglaive.
Yeah, it happens in a movie. What's the guy's name? Oh crap! I'm forgetting his name, and I wrote it down and didn't think that I would. The guy who gets killed, the like grandpa who gets killed,
Jared.
I think
how
that
could you forget Jared?
It starts. I could never forget Jared.
There was a 4-hour scene just dedicated to
where
Jared's
everyone's talking
funeral.
About Jared. It starts with Jared, I think, where you come home and they're so vague. I think only one person ever even says that he was killed, and it's like, we lost Jared. They took Jared, and you're like,
no, nobody
what?
Says he's killed. I remember this specifically. They don't actually say it. They just say Jared. ..
Yeah,
and like they're
and
just.
I think
they don't
maybe
actually
later
say
in the game, one person says is dead or something. Mm-hmm. But like, because I remember I was waiting for it, being like, are they never gonna say that he died or who he is or why this matters or what the hell is going on? And that was kind of the beginning of a whole kind of run of things that happen off screen, and that's just where the story for me anyway like deteriorates. And there are like cool parts, like the negotiation was cool. I thought that was going, I think that I think back on it and I'm kind of, I don't like it as much because I know where it was going, because the whole thing with like Luna just then sort of dying and that whole fight, and it's like a can't lose fight. That whole part was just really weird, and I was like, "Why did I do that whole negotiation?"
Which
anyway?
Fight?
The
Leviathan
fight against
fight?
The god in the water.
Leviathan.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous that they introduced Luna and then just fridge her right there,
and then have like more cutscenes with her later, where you're learning more things about her and her brother.
Her brother is the most like annoying,
the most what the fuck like, character. Yeah, he's up there.
Yeah. It's just like, hey, I'm a villain. No, actually, I'm not. It makes even less sense if you've seen the movie, because in the movie, he has like an actual motivation for... Mm. So in the movie, it's explained that he was like, there was a scene way in the past where Noctis's dad has to rescue Noctis because they're all in Tenebrae, which is the city mm-hmm. that Luna is from. Mm-hmm. And Noctis's dad escapes with Noctis and like leaves Luna and her brother behind, and that leads to this festering anger inside of Luna's brother. Hmm. And so it makes sense why he joins the bad guys and like betrays his sister. But it doesn't make sense that he's suddenly a good guy.
Yeah, and then he becomes a zombie whatsoever. And then you fight this ridiculous boss battle against him. That thing in chapter 13 where you learn that the emperor of Niflheim is like actually this demon that has been chasing you, and you learn it during a boss fight with him. There's just some voiceover. So I feel
that like I liked.
Once you get to Altissa, it's really too bad because Altissa is a really cool looking location. And I thought, oh, this is like where the story is going to pick up and we're going to get uh-huh. Luna. Maybe she'll join the party. I'm sure a lot of people thought that when they got there. And instead, you just watch her die in a cutscene to like Captain Dipshit, the bad guy. Wait, is it Arden? Is that his name?
Yeah, Arden.
Arden, yeah. Who just is the most...
I like Arden a lot.
I can't stand that guy. Like, I think he was so like, what the fuck is this dude? Like, for the first half of the movie or the game, he just kept coming out. There's a part in the story where it's the part where he steals Prompto and you're on top of the train and like Noctis attacks Arden, and then Arden is like, surprise, it's not really me, like it's Prompto. And then Noctis just threw him off the train, but actually he threw Prompto off the train, and then it just goes to a loading screen, and then the loading screen
it's like
says
in a time warp
it says the loading screen says I think it says using a stitch in time, Arden fooled Noctis and took Prompto or something. And I just was sitting there staring at it thinking, what is a stitch in time? What does that mean? So I went and Googled it, and I Googled it because I thought maybe it's a spell, like a known thing. And I Googled it, and the only thing I found were like forum threads from people saying, what the fuck did that mean on that loading screen when it said that?
Yep. So maybe it's explained in the Prompto DLC.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Prompto finally becomes a robot that can use a stitch in time. So like that kind of, man, I'm really bagging on this game.
It deserves to be bagged on.
Yeah,
for
this
all this stuff
does.
Yeah, I mean, this stuff sucks, and it's such a bummer that such a game with so much cool potential and so much cool stuff in it, like the characters, the main characters who justify the whole thing, but it's too bad that they couldn't release something finished and something that felt less messy.
Yeah, it does make me. So, do you think it's Tabata is who basically took this game across the finish line? Do you think that he is going to then be given now, because this game was successful, he'll be given the reins for FF16 and get to actually make a complete game? Like, that
no,
seems like
I think
hope,
he
right?
wants to do a new IP. I don't think he wants to do FF16.
Oh, really?
I'm sure he'll be able to do something cool. I'm sure someone else is working on FF16 as we speak. But I think that Tabata and his crew are stuck with 15 for a while longer, just to do all the DLC and complete things. It's interesting. Even though you say he took the finish line, he actually, I mean, they did start from scratch in 2012 or like the summer of 2012, whenever he took over. So that was like, it wasn't like he took what Versus 13 was and brought it to the next level. Like Versus 13
was
nothing.
No, I mean more that he actually shipped a game. Like he finished what he started.
Yeah. Have you played his other game, Type Zero?
No.
Well, so that's also a very messy game with like incomplete storytelling and narrative threads that don't go anywhere. And it's also a game that feels, to me at least, it feels greater than the sum of its parts, which is funny. It's just his style is to make these games that are like super dark and messy and have cool combat systems and really clunky storytelling, which I guess is just his thing. We'll see what they do for the next Final Fantasy game. Hopefully
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
So I want to know more about Pityos Ruins. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Let's talk about it.
The best dungeon in the game.
Yeah, it seemed crazy, even just finding it is crazy.
Yeah, so like, wait, so what did you... Walk me through exactly what you did.
Well, so I followed your...
Other than complain to me.
Yes, mostly I just got on Slack and just sent you viciously angry DMs as you laughed.
Yeah.
But I followed your guide to get the flying car, so I got the flying regalia. And then followed another guide that I think you wrote or someone wrote that said like where to land. It's really interesting though, that it's just over next to the rock and it's this tiny little landing strip that's sort of indicated on the map. I mean, you can see it if you're looking, but man, you wouldn't know. And you actually don't just land right there. You kind of land and get out of the car and then you have to walk for a while.
No, you have to. So on the map, you see like a diagonal yellow line.
Yeah, yeah, like a landing strip.
And that's where you have to land. I didn't find this on my own. I found it like before the game came out because the game had leaked out and someone else found it. And
right. Yeah. No. It's
fortunately,
the kind of
I found
thing
it
that,
before
that. I would never find without the internet.
How many times did you crash while you were trying to land?
I never crashed. I crashed. So what happened to me was I flew there. I tried to just fly there from Hammerhead, and then I was almost there, and I thought, okay, I should probably land because I know that you can crash the car and die. So I should probably land. And then I tried to land and I crashed the car and died. And I was like it was, oh man, that crashing animation is so janky and bad too. Like it like landed and then they were on the road. They looked okay. And then it was
Just
like,
you remember the
over.
Video I made.
I was like, it's a rough landing, but it seemed like we were fine.
Yeah, Final Fantasy XV's crashing. The airship is just the worst thing in the game by far.
It's really bad. Yeah.
So janky. And it's horrible.
Honestly, it's corny. It's corny looking. I don't even think it's very cool looking. It like is. So I did that, and then I was like, okay, I'm taking a break. I can't, I just am stopping, because I was really kind of burnt out after this boss fight I'd done. So I went back, and like I think I just fast-traveled there on your advice and just saved it. But then I did it the first time. Like I just flew up and then said, okay, well, there's the thing. All right, I'm going to land, and I just totally landed, and it was fine. And then I just walked.
So then you went in?
Yeah, and then I walked
to the dungeon. Did you do any of it?
Yeah, I did the first part. I kind of like get what it is. Like it's just like a puzzle dungeon, right?
No, it's a puzzle platforming dungeon. Yeah, well, right, so as you go, there are tons of different segments. It's like a long dungeon, and it will flip around. So are you planning on doing any more, or are you just totally done?
Yeah, I might check it out.
Well, so should I not spoil what happens?
Absolutely tell me. I don't care.
Okay, so like you're going through, the first section is kind of simple puzzles, and it teaches you some basic mechanics about the dungeon. Mm-hmm. And then you keep going, and it keeps doing these elaborate things. Like there's one big hallway where you have to go and like weave through these different rooms and solve all these different mazes and ride these platforms and go through spikes and do all these intricate different platforming things. Then you get to this big wall, and it looks sort of like the demon wall from Final Fantasy IV, which I know you haven't played, but some people listening have. And so you have to ride on it and like kind of weave through it inside and outside. And as it's moving, you have to jump at the right time and like get to different platforms. And it does all these cool things. Then at some point, it switches to a 2D platformer that looks kind of like Inside. And
really?
It's all two-dimensional jumping. And you have to jump like up and down through these like like Mario-style like different sections. And then it goes. Man, it gets so hard and complicated and interesting. Man, it's so cool. Like my hands were sweating so much by the time I finished it. And you have to jump on all these different statues, and then there are these parts where they flip around gravity, so like you'll be trying to do platforming on while inside of this wheel that is rotating, and you have to kind of ground yourself and figure out exactly when to jump and where to jump while the wheel is moving. It's all really convoluted and complicated.
So
and,
what the hell? I mean, have they said anything about why the fuck this is even in the game?
No, and nobody's asked. It's really frustrating. There have been so many interviews of Tabata. I really want to talk to him because I feel like I'm going to ask a lot of questions that other people haven't, but nobody's talked to him about it at all.
I don't think
most people have discovered it. I think like most people reviewed the game, didn't bother finding it or anything. And
well, especially if you were playing the game before it was out. I mean, I would forgive you for not finding it.
I happened to see...
It.
I happened to see a Reddit post that was like, here's the secret dungeon. And so I found it. But it's very much like another game entirely. I almost wish that they would release it as DLC or something, or like something as a side thing so you could access it even without finishing the game, because it's so cool. And I wish they should make an entire game just based on this.
For all the things that I complained about, this just has nothing to do with any of them. Like, it's just a completely different thing.
Completely different. You're by yourself. There's no combat. It's all platforming. It's just all puzzles.
Someone decided to make a puzzle game, and that's
It's wild, and it's so good. It's so cleverly designed and awesome, and it really left me with like a high on the game.
I'm skeptical only that it's a puzzle platformer and that I don't think that the controls in this game are very precise, and like,
no, you have to get used to Noctis sliding every time he lands, like, but that's kind of part of the fun, is that he's kind of clunky and you have to deal with
the clunky controls and the shitty slidey protagonist.
You know what, I think that adds to the challenge of it in a cool way. I think a lot of people are like, oh, this sucks because Noctis is not meant for platforming, but I actually think it works really well.
I enjoy that, but I understand that you feel.
I don't know, it's like an added weight. It's like handicapping you a little bit that you have to deal with Noctis sliding as you jump, and also you have to like calculate that into your equation. So if you're jumping on this,
like in game design, when a thing that is adding difficulty is not the central thing of what you're doing, it's just some other shit that like is a
it's a different level of friction, but it's something where like you're jumping and you have to look at the narrowness of a platform and account for the fact that Noctis might move a little bit after lands.
Right, I get it. I mean, this is, believe me, like, right, I'm thinking back to like Destiny's jumping puzzles, and like Destiny was not a platformer by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm thinking
exactly. Well, this reminds me, this dungeon is basically the Vault of Glass, Piteous Ruins, because you're just thrown into this dungeon, not told what to do, and you have to figure it out. And it's all these obscure puzzles and platforming things.
That is cool. I think one of the things I talked about in the UI critique that I wrote today is that Final Fantasy struggles with that a little bit, only because the game is so fundamentally untrustworthy a lot of the time. Like the UI will just tell you to go places that you shouldn't go, and like things will be broken, that it makes it a lot harder for me to roll with it when it's saying, oh yeah, now I'm not going to tell you anything and you're just going to have to trust that this works. But it is cool that they did that, because I like when games do that. So I'll check it out. It sounds cool. It sounds interesting.
So let's talk about the rest of the second half of the game. Chapter 13. Did you hate that as much as everybody else?
Yeah, remember I wrote a whole article that was about how.
The stages of.
Yeah, it was shitty. I mean, it was, my article was like a kind of a comedy article, like about the stages of dealing with it or whatever. I mean, it was sort of like making fun of how shitty it was, but like I wasn't like screaming at my TV or anything. I kind of just like put my head down and worked my way through it. I checked a guide a few times just because I was like, oh my God, how far am I? Like, how much longer do I have? Do I have to do this? But you know,
well, that's the thing. I didn't think it was that bad. I just thought it was too long.
Yeah, it was long. There were plenty of things I didn't like about it. They were the kind of things that I usually don't like. Like the fact that it like added stealth mechanics to a game that just does not, like anytime that game went stealth, it just fell apart completely. And like that, having those stealth mechanics was really annoying.
The base's stealth mechanics sucked, but with this you got the death spell pretty quickly and you could use that
it never worked for me. Like it just, you had to hold down the button so long that they would stagger you,
and
even then, I mean, just playing a game where you're trying not to be spotted and then you feel shitty when you get spotted, and then you have to like run and find a hiding spot, and the hiding spots are hard to find, so that whole part kind of bummed me out. And you know, the fights just weren't great, and the story stuff was really weird at that point. I just felt very disconnected from what was going on. But I like the basic idea of saying, like, let's isolate our protagonist and, like, show him how much stronger he would be if he had his friends.
Thematically, it's cool.
Right, it's just that same thing where the execution was fucked up. And, like, him reunite, even the reunion with your friends was weird, because it just wasn't this, like, it could have been, you know, this really amazing moment where, like, they come ride to the rescue and they come out and suddenly you're fighting with your full team and, like, you're beating this guy who is just beating you. But instead, it's just this weird anticlimax where, like, Arden is just talking shit over the radio constantly, and then you find Prompto and he's like, I'm a robot. And you're like, what? And they're like, we don't care. And it's just so, and then you're fighting the guy and you're like, he's the emperor. And so it just, it, like, fumbles so consistently where the you know, the better version of it would have been good.
So I think one of the strategy guides or something said that Prompto is actually the son of like one of the emperor's lieutenants or something who is in. Do you remember that one scene where they're all in a tent talking to the emperor about the crystal early in the game?
Yeah.
And there's this one guy. Maybe. Well, so that's, it's like the one scene that's like the bad guys. It's the only scene in the game.
Where they actually show the bad guys. I do remember.
And it's the emperor and the dragoon lady and this other dude. And this other dude never appears in the game again. But apparently he's Prompto's father. His name is Verstale or something like that.
You sure his
and
father is revealed. I think maybe Prompto's father is Jared.
Is Jared, yeah. And then it's revealed in a strategy guide that this guy, this random guy, is Prompto's father.
Sounds about right. It seems about right.
And yeah, this guy was like, people knew who he was because he had this great scene in the E3 2013 trailer where he's like walking with a bunch of guards. But that scene is never actually in the game. Mm. It's funny. I wonder how much of this game was like, like, there's no way to extricate this game from the marketing behind it and the number of trailers and the history of it. But I wonder how people would have reacted to it if it had just come out with none of that and none of the baggage of
you've read, it's an impossible question because you just can't, because it wouldn't exist in this state without all of that. So,
right.
But that is I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
It's interesting.
Hard to say, man. One thing I wasn't expecting with Chapter 13 was also that it's so close to the end of the game. Like, you get to that crystal, and then Noctis just gets sucked into the crystal, and then boom, it's 10 years later, and it's time to, like, sprint to the ending, which also is, you know, weird, because... Like,
and then you see, what's his face? Jared's grandson.
Oh, that's what's right, you do, and he's, like, grown up. Oh, and that was one of the things that really bummed me out. I think when they talk about, what's her name? Gladio's sister?
Iris. But you never actually see her.
How she's, like, the demon hunter now, and she's turned into this badass, and then you don't ever see her, right? Like, I didn't miss that?
No, I think that was... I think there was supposed to be more stuff in the world of Ruin that was
cut. I think that seems pretty clear.
And I've heard that separately from people who know things. And that is one of them, like Cindy we didn't see in the future. That whole thing was just very much like cut short and very clearly.
That was one of the clearest cuts.
And then they stuck demons everywhere on the way from... But you can't actually, I don't know if you know this, but there's no way to return to the world of Ruin because once you finish the game and you get your post-launch save, you can go between Insomnia and the previous world, the time traveling back.
Yep.
But there's no way to leave Insomnia in the present. So you can't actually go anywhere in the world of Ruin, which really sucks. You can't go back to that gas station and like talk to people or anything like that. Lots of cut stuff.
And that was I just wasn't expecting that that Chapter 13 would end and it would just so unceremoniously dump you into the end game. And then really the end was weird as well. Like just the fights were not very difficult. Like I just really didn't have too much of a hard time. The final boss fight was kind of nothing, I thought. Like, I just beat the shit out
of it. Felt like there was meant to be something else, and it really sucked. It seems like that whole Arden thing was really cool where you're flying around the city and fighting him, but then it feels like after that he should have turned into a demon, and then you bring out the
that
full party and have like
I was like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like Sephiroth, like he turns into like a friggin' like planet sized like thing, and instead, no, you just kind of beat his ass. And then I really like this concept narratively that this guy is immortal. It's very poorly communicated by the game, but I've kind of figured it out after the fact, is that this guy is immortal, and that in order to really beat him, Noctis has to beat him in the real world, and then like summon the power of his ancestors and like destroy the city, I guess, and they all die. And so then he joins Luna and all of his friends, you know, and you know, Ignis and Gladio and Prompto, and they're all in the afterlife, and or the whatever it's called, it's not exactly the afterlife, but like the liminal space between life and death, where Arden is waiting because he's going to come back, and they find him there, and then they like all unite their power and destroy him, and in the process like destroy themselves. That's pretty epic. Like, that's, you know, that's pretty cool.
But it's not just that he's immortal. It's like I don't know how much of this you picked up on. Some of it requires reading some of the assorted texts that are floating around. But he was like So back in the day, 1,000 years ago or whatever, he was one of the descendants of Noctis's royal bloodline.
Okay.
And there was this plague that was created by Ifrit, who is the fire dude who you fight at the end of the game. And so Ifrit created this plague, and in order to heal the plague, Ardyn would go around and like heal people by sucking their demons into his body. And so instead of like praising him or rewarding him, the king at the time decided to ostracize him and like kick him out of the castle and remove him from the bloodline and all, yada yada yada. So this was all his revenge, and he had vowed to eliminate the bloodline, the Luxus Calum, whatever bloodline. So you can understand why he was so pissed.
I can now, but like it's just like all of the stuff with this game where it's so poorly communicated and comes in such weird lumpy, you know, like delivery globules over the course of this sprawling game, that like by the end I was like, oh, this is kind of cool shit. This all could have been cool, just like the arc with him and his friends, and then that payoff at the end where we get to see him give that sort of tearful speech, which I really liked that scene too. Was great. And then of course then there's this like coda scene where we just see happy Noctis in the afterlife with Luna, or like what?
Yeah, it was like the Titanic thing where it's like you see that flash of the afterlife or whatever, her fantasies in the afterlife.
Yeah.
But hold on. But as far as the brothers thing, I wanted to bring up before, I think you sold their relationships short a little bit. Like there are a few scenes that we haven't mentioned, like Prompto and Noctis in the motel and a few other cool moments that really build up that relationship and justify that payoff at the end. So I think that despite the various holes throughout the story, I think they do enough to justify that arc. The other arcs are totally not justified, like the Luna one. Like, there is no way that Final Fantasy XV earned an afterlife ending with Noctis and Luna, also, because there's no relationship between
Noctis
and Luna.
It should have been him and his bros, like, playing King's, what's it called, King's Cross, or what's the game they play?
Yeah, that would have been a lot more fitting. I think
that would have been great.
Like,
like the end of Shaun of the Dead, like they're sitting playing video games in heaven together. That would have been great.
Yeah,
I would have been way more down with that.
Although I liked the dad's speech at the end. It was a cool moment. And the music, the Final Fantasy music.
Yeah, that was nice. And I don't even have a huge attachment to the series, but I really liked that. I mean, I heard the music and immediately knew what it was. I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, okay.
It's kind of emotionally manipulative music.
Yeah, and it's neat how the menu changes. I actually think that's really
cool. Oh, yeah, that's really cool. But anytime you play that music, you can immediately evoke an emotional reaction, so it's kind of taking advantage of that. Kind of an unfair trick to play, like, oh yeah, we want to get you emotional, play the Final Fantasy music. But yeah, totally, it should have been an ending with him sitting on the throne with his bros, like hanging out. Man, that would have been so much cooler. Yeah, the Luna stuff just did not need to be in the game. Luna herself did not need to be in the game.
Just didn't.
Her entire character was just a waste.
Like, she was just a plot device. Like, she just existed to like activate.
But not even that. She wasn't even an important plot device. She didn't do anything for the plot except summon Leviathan.
Yeah, and like get Noctis really the even clear ring. What else she did, right? Like, there were all those scenes with her and her brother, but I don't even really know what happened. So
yeah, I guess she got him the ring by getting it. But who even paid attention to the ring?
Right? Who cares about
such
the ring?
Nonsense.
The ring is terrible.
Yeah, it should have. Man, if this game was more focused, it could have been so great.
I completely agree with that. I think that with a lot more focus and like deliberate sort of plot machinations, this would have, it could have been a far better
but
version
that
of the same
said
story.
So I'm very much looking forward to like episode Gladiol and episode Prompto and all that stuff, because those characters are characters I care about, which is more than I could say for like Final Fantasy 13, where I never play episode Hope or episode Snow.
That's true. I mean, yeah, if we're clearing that low bar, we've cleared it. But the I'm looking forward to those just because this game, like I said, this game is so weird, and I just want to know, like, I'm sure they're weird, I'm sure it's interesting, I'm sure whatever happens is going to be something that
I think they're going to do totally new gameplay stuff, like one of them will be a first person shooter or something.
Oh god, yeah, that would make sense. Yeah, like Promptos will be an FPS. That would make sense.
Yeah, Gladios will be a brawler game.
It'll be interesting, we'll see. And then the full version of this game will be interesting too, like how
very interesting
how it all fits together at the end of the year when it's released on PC and you get your your 2017 prediction correct.
Yeah, I think so. I think they'll do that. The big question, I think, is like how much will they add cut content? Will they restore things? Yeah. Will they, like the World of Ruin stuff, will they beef that up a little bit? I'm very curious to see what they do because the story patch is coming soon and the fixing of chapter 13 will be really interesting to see. It'll be fascinating to see how they fix their
the chapter fixing 13. Of chapter 13. That's a Thomas Pynchon follow up.
Or a chapter in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
The scouring of the Shire, the fixing of chapter 13.
The fixing of chapter 13.
Yeah, so any final thoughts on Final Fantasy before we wrap up?
No.
So you like the game overall?
I don't know. No, I'm very mixed on.
Yeah,
on the
you're
game.
Ambivalent.
I wouldn't describe it that way. I would say that I admire and appreciate some things about it, but I have a lot of like, it really annoyed me a lot and I have a lot of issues with it too.
That is totally fair. I don't blame you. It annoyed me a lot too, but I think I was able to look past a lot of the issues. I think the key for me was just that I love the combat system and you hated it. So I think
that
makes
a
huge difference.
Definitely make a big difference.
When the fundamental thing you're doing is like I actually enjoyed, I don't know if you definitely didn't do any of the secret dungeons or anything like that, did you?
No, not really. I did some side dungeons, but not really.
The ones that are unlocked when you open the doors. No, you didn't do it because it's all post-game stuff. But I enjoyed doing some of that stuff. Did you do a dungeon called Castle Mark Tower?
Not that I remember.
That's a really cool one. It's got some cool stuff. Yeah, there's some cool stuff in the game that you didn't do, but you don't have to do it.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Yeah, you're letting
there's
me off.
There's plenty
of... I appreciate it.
There's
so many other video
this.
Games to play, man. I'm going to go play
I'm not going
to
tell
instead.
You. I'm not going to tell you to play those games.
Wow.
I'm not going to do it.
We're turning
tell you
over
play.
A new leaf.
Well, but you should play some other things at the moment.
I can think of a few. I'm definitely going to do that. So many games. So many games.
All right. Final Fantasy 15. It is a video game.
It is.
I'm sure we will talk more about it when the new DLC stuff comes out. But for now, I hope that everybody enjoyed the spoiler cast.
Yeah.
And we will be back next week. Is next week GDC? No, that's in
2 weeks. More week before GDC, and then we'll be doing our fun GDC extravaganza.
Lots of guests. We have lots of guest plans.
Yeah,
so that'll
we're working
be cool.
out. It's going to be good.
As always, you can reach us at splitscreen@kotaka.com. Mm-hmm. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes and leave us nice ratings. You can say whatever you like. As long as it's a 5-star rating, you can leave us the nastiest messages you want. As long as it's 5 stars.
Yes.
I'm totally fine with that.
Yes. It's really anything you want to say. Just make shit up. Five stars.
Make up whatever you want. Yep. Call us a hentai porn podcast if you like. As long as you give us 5 stars.
Not inaccurate. Not a totally inaccurate way to describe it.
Not totally inaccurate. All right. Goodbye, Kirk.
All right. See you, Jason.